It was in the late spring of 1975 when I took a boat from Dunleary in Dublin across to North Wales and travelled down to London City, or London Town, as Dick Whittington would have said. And when I left Ireland, I left a campaign in favour of the separation of church and state. I was actively involved in campaigning for the separation of the Roman Catholic Church from the Irish state. And I continued to campaign on that issue probably for as long as I remained in close contact with Ireland, which might have been for a few years anyway. I also, that day I left Ireland, I was an atheist. I certainly not only didn't believe in a God, but I suppose, looking back, I regarded people who did believe in a God as, we'll say, misguided. So I went to the UK and lived there for a long time. My two children went to Church of England primary schools and secondary schools. And at no stage was the issue of their religion in any way an impediment to anything. In any case, neither of them had been baptized, and neither was this a topic of conversation. And in fact, the only place that it ever became a conversation would have been very rarely in my own family, and I think my mother, for many years, hoped that they would be baptized. And I may be wrong about this, but I think that for a very brief period, one of my sons entertained the idea. But living in the UK with children and myself and my wife, who none of us practicing any religion, was no problem at all. And we didn't feel, certainly I didn't feel, in any way remarkable, or this was not a basis for standing out from the crowd. It wasn't a strong statement. It was just my way of life. If I had been living back in Ireland, it would have been making a strong statement, and it wouldn't simply have been my way of life. It would have been an action which, whether I liked it or not, would have been seen as attempting to undermine the status quo. So I grew through this period of time. I mellowed through this period of time. And by the time I came back to Ireland in 2005, I would say I no longer called myself an atheist. I was not a campaigner against religion in any form. To me, it was, you know, a matter of, I suppose, amusement what human beings believe and put their trust in. And I'd met and been friends with people who believed in just about anything, including the existence of angels carrying real messages in over real time and space. So all of this was, I was, if in that sense, I had become very flexible, and I just came to call myself, and I don't remember when it started in the first place, I came to call myself an unbeliever. Unbeliever as opposed to non-believer, and I certainly don't call myself an atheist. I haven't called myself an atheist for a very long time. The fascinating thing coming back to Ireland was that I got married in a Roman Catholic church, and the good thing was that the Roman Catholic priest who officiated at the wedding, he made it incredibly easy, in fact, totally easy, for me to get married without being in any way hypocritical or without saying anything in public, not without saying in public that I believed in anything which I didn't. So I didn't even have to say, you know, I believe in God. I didn't have to say anything like that. I didn't have to confess my sins at no stage in the process. It was slightly helped by the fact that I'd been married in a registry office in the UK, and in Roman Catholic thinking, I had thereby never been legitimately married in the eyes, certainly in the eyes of the Roman Catholic Church. And I came back to Ireland and I had a number of surprises in this area. Now, of course, the mind and the memory embroiders things a lot. So when I came back, the Ireland I had left seemed to me to have been a very religious place, a relatively devout place, a place in which there was, to put it terribly mildly, at the very least, respect for the clergy. Ireland, remember, had never had an anti-clerical secular movement of any significance. So, but what I noticed was that the whole atmosphere in relation to religion had changed massively. People were still calling themselves Catholic. People were still saying that they believed in God. But as far as I could see, their religion didn't affect how they lived their life, how they spent their time. Huge numbers of people didn't go to weekly confession. Some people went to weekly mass. Very few went to daily mass. And pronouncements by the Roman Catholic Church against, we'll say for sake of argument, against contraception, they were all, you know, ignored. I'm not saying they were ignored by everybody. I'm not saying nobody went to mass every day. I'm not saying nobody ever went to confession. But in the meanwhile, other things like purgatory had disappeared. Nobody spoke about purgatory. There was now just heaven and hell. And for some people, hell didn't really exist at all. It was just something to counterbalance heaven. And I got the overall impression that the oomph, if you like, the energy and the belief had gone out of religion, for the most part. And in fact, what the religion had become was something that was more and more innocuous and less driven with huge passion. And I thought to myself often that, well, look, if it had been like this when I was growing up, I might still be a member of the Roman Catholic Church. People generally, as far as I could see, didn't have any practices which reminded me of what it had been like when I'd been young. Novenas, for example. That's when people go to do something in particular for consecutive days or nights or whatever. But novenas and it's no good me saying things like that, but let's just say novenas weren't practiced. I suppose all I can think of at the moment is how similar to the Church of England the Roman Catholic Church seemed to have become. Now, I don't want to go as far as to go the whole hog with that association between the Roman Catholic Church and the Church of England. I certainly had come while in the UK to regard the Church of England very benignly and to, you know, generally feel, I suppose you'd say, a slight air of, you know, positivity, certainly no real negativity towards the Church of England. So I basically found, to put it awfully crudely, and you know, the balls had gone out of Roman Catholicism in Ireland. Now, this is before all of the scandals came about. This is before all of the stuff about priests raping children and bishops arranging systematically to cover it up. And nuns doing terrible things to children as well. This is all before that. So the word I associate now with Ireland, because all of these tendencies and things that I'm talking about, if anything, they've just become amplified in the years since I came back to Ireland, in the 10 years. And the very recent victory of the Yes side in the same-sex marriage referendum is a fantastic example of the degree of change that has taken place in Ireland and the degree to which people will no longer take guidance from, quote, their church. Now, they'll still go to church for, you know, baptism, first communion, including confession, confirmation, weddings, and they'll still perhaps receive extreme unction and be buried in a Roman Catholic cemetery. I haven't got statistics to back up the extent to which everybody does all these things, but I think there's quite a lot of that happens. But what I mean, the word I associate with all of this is lapsed. Ireland is now full, I think, of lapsed Roman Catholics. Again, I stress, not everyone is lapsed, but there's a very good chance that the person you meet at the bus stop and get chatting with is more likely to be lapsed than anything else. So that now is my word for today. It's the word I'm contributing to AudioMo, the audio community within which people share and for which people share pieces of audio all the way through the month of June. And I think people have been sharing pieces of audio for about the best part of 10 days now. So that's it, and thank you very much for listening. And it's Paul O'Mahony, lapsing out. Bye for now. Bye.